across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Back here live from Lake Wissota on this Tuesday morning, 7:06. Nice to have you along on another unseasonably warm February morning. Coming up later this hour, we will talk to Congressman Mark Pocan about the collapse of a bipartisan deal to increase border security and clamp down on undocumented immigration into the United States, a signature issue for Republicans until it wasn't. So we'll get into that with Congressman Pocan. Also, we will continue to mark the passing of country music icon Toby Keith. We'll talk about the closing of two significant hospitals in the Chippewa Valley and the actions being taken by Governor Evers, and also the city attorney in Eau Claire, a strongly worded letter about how HSHS pulled the rug out from underneath thousands of people here in the Chippewa Valley. All that and Chad Holmes, but first, tell you that around the state, it's 23 degrees up here on Lake Wissota, 22 in Hayward. Park Falls is at 28, so is Wausau. Green Bay's at 29, and so is La Crosse. Wisconsin Rapids, you're at 26. Oshkosh, 27. Madison, 24. Waukesha, you're reporting 27. Has Rob chimed in from Tigerton? Yes, he is. Good morning from Tigerton. It's 23 degrees, light fog. Did you see a beautiful sunset with the sky on fire red? It was beautiful. My favorite. Thank you, Rob. Yes, I did, and I saw plenty of other people put things up on Facebook about that as well. And to our earlier topic about what advice would you give to somebody new to Wisconsin, Roger chimes in with where to get the best cheese, Dairy State in Rudolph. Also, he notes 10 hours of daylight has reached the 45th parallel for the first time this year. Amen. And RIP to Toby Keith. Roger notes that as well. So you did just hear your local forecast across your Civic Media Radio Network favorite station. But we need a statewide view of things, so we bring in meteorologist Brittany Merlot to tell us more about it right now. Brittany, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good, but let me start you off with a question here, because we've been hearing about this terrible flooding out west, this atmospheric river, et cetera, et cetera. Where's this all going from here? Is it something that's going to then slide to the south? Is it dissipating over the mountains? Are we in the crosshairs? That sounds just dreadful. Is any of that going to reach us?
Yeah, so it actually is going to reach us, but it is going to dissipate and die out as it gets here. So that is good news. This high pressure that's been sitting over us for the past, goodness, couple days for sure, ever since this weekend, it's been so strong and holding that low pressure off in the West Coast steady. So now it's starting to give out. It's starting to move off to the east, and that's allowing that same system to head our way. Now, what it's going to do when it gets here is going to be rain by Wednesday night into our western areas, and it'll continue as rain for a majority of us throughout Thursday as well. It's actually going to spike our temperatures for some of us into the mid-50s. So this will bring the warmest day of the week on Thursday because of that same system. But the good news is we're only looking at a tenth of an inch to potentially a quarter of an inch of rainfall. I think the most rain might be a half an inch up into the northern half of the state, but overall it might spin a few flurries behind it, but we're staying away from the worst of it. No big snow accumulations, no heavy flooding expected here for us. And I know off into the West Coast, the big problem is all of the wildfires they had, the dry vegetation. There's no vegetation to really hold the ground still. So when they got all of that rain, it really created all of those mudslides because there's no trees or plants to really hold the ground in place. So it really made it worse for them, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, the worst of all possible worlds where you have the wildfires go through and then to have this happen. And I just can't help but think we must be – this could have come a lot differently if the air masses were in place, that all this moisture could have turned into some kind of – we've seen plenty of blizzards come from the Four Corners area.
And oh, absolutely.
We're not getting something like that this time. And I honestly feel like, we dodged a bullet in that way.
We did. And I think we could thank El Nino a little bit for that, because El Nino really focuses on the West Coast and leaves us alone. And that's exactly what's happening.
Which is also, punishing with those wildfires in Peru and Australia and everything else. We're in a good place here. Brittany, thank you so much. Have a wonderful
day. You're welcome. You too.
All right. Turning our attention now to something a bit more local, but definitely worth noting that up here in the Chippewa Valley, there is an Illinois-based health system. It's called Hospital Sisters Health System, or HSHS. And this Illinois-based company has been operating a couple of hospitals here in this part of the state for the better part of a century, I feel like. Sacred Heart Hospital in Eau Claire, St. Joseph's Hospital right here in Chippewa Falls. I can actually see it out my window a couple of miles away here. And when I say bombshell announcement, I'm not kidding. It was completely out of the blue that this announcement came a couple of weeks back, not of cutbacks, because obviously the healthcare industry is a bit of a roller coaster, but that they were just closing. They're closing one of the main hospitals in Eau Claire, the one that does more than 800 deliveries a year, as Selena Heller told us yesterday. And St. Joe's, which also it is the hospital for Chippewa Falls. And closing many Prevea clinics around the area, putting some 1,400 people out of work, but causing a ripple effect through the entire economy and disrupting untold numbers of lives. Well, Governor Tony Evers, also the Commissioner of Insurance, a top official from the Department of Health Services, a top official, the Secretary of the Department of Workforce Development, met with local leaders up here to take action right away and to set up a couple of job fairs to help with the many workers who are going to be, looking for work here sooner rather than later. And it reminded people of when the Uniroyal Tire Factory shut down here in Eau Claire in the early 1990s and put about as many people out of work. And frankly, although this is much more of a white-collar layoff, it is still a mass layoff just the same. And the city attorney, Stephen Nick in Eau Claire, sent a letter to HSHS that I'm going to read some of it just to give you a feel for how serious this is up here. But also, frankly, to not let HSHS off the hook. This was not handled well at all. And the letter includes some of these excerpts here. "We're deeply concerned about this abrupt decision, that it is significantly impactful on employees, patients, our city, regional medical and emergency operations, and the community in general. The notice was provided without any prior discussion with the city or other local, regional healthcare and emergency services providers, patients, state officials, and those sick and in need to whom HSHS and Prevea have legal and self-assumed ethical and spiritual commitments. Your decision to close is shocking and difficult on others you have these obligations toward. The manner in which you are conducting this closure is contrary to your stated mission and potentially illegal. We ask that you immediately meet your legal obligations and productively lift back up your ethical obligations to ease this transition." The letter from the city attorney goes on to talk about a law that says an employer shall not order a plant closing or mass layoff until the end of a 60-day period after the employer serves written notice of such an order. But some employees have mentioned that, their termination date has been actually accelerated. The letter notes that we ask you to remain open and fully operational, at least until your originally stated date of April 21st, or longer as necessary, to ensure all continuation of patient care obligations are met for current and planned procedures. For example, I'm thinking of the people that were being treated at their cancer center. They had the locked psych ward for the Chippewa Valley. They had the L.E. Phillips Libertas Center, basically the drug and alcohol rehab center here. It has closed already. The letter continues, "Any employer violating the law is subject to civil penalty, including daily forfeitures to the city, who has standing to bring an action to the Department of Workforce Development or an original action in federal court. The city hopes and expects that such legal action is not necessary. Many are affected by your decision to close a major hospital in Eau Claire, the only hospital in Chippewa Falls, and the only clinics in some of our neighboring communities across northwest Wisconsin. These facilities offer critical regional inpatient behavioral health care, for which, I'm reminded in this letter, HSHS accepted $15 million in state taxpayer funding less than 3 years ago. Your executive director of behavioral health described the funding then as necessary to meet unmet demand with behavioral health in western Wisconsin. Once you decided to accept these taxpayer funds and your patients, you accepted an obligation to the state, the community, and of course these patients to ensure the services were adequately provided. Upon your decision to close, you must make every reasonable effort to ensure continuation of adequate care. It goes on to call on HSHS to try to find workable solutions to minimize the impact of their decision, and then finally wraps up by saying, we invite HSHS, even in departure from our community after more than 100 years, to remain true to your stated dedication to serve the sick and those in need, to minimize the impacts of this closure to those in the community. Sincerely, Stephen Nick, City Attorney for the City of Eau Claire. And of course, it's written with a lot of, you know, legal speak to it, but it was, in my mind, right that somebody finally hurled something back at HSHS. And we want to say, oh, well, they're, you know, it's a good Catholic hospital system that's doing the best that it can. No, it handled this in a very unprofessional, crappy way. They did. Who just abruptly after 100 years says, well, we're just closing the hospital down? There's been talk that other providers in the area, you know, are being asked to maybe, you know, come do something about it. Do we even know if HSHS did anything like that? Did they approach Marshfield Clinic? Did they approach Mayo Clinic? Did they approach Oakleaf or some out-of-state entity? If they did, I'd kind of like to hear more about that and not feel like rather than do anything that would cushion the blow, y'all just up and decided, no, we'll just close down hospitals where hundreds of deliveries take place. And again, where all kinds of specialized services take place. And now people are left in limbo. Some people have to drive to the Twin Cities or La Crosse or elsewhere for their services. This was not handled well at all. And I'm thankful that the governor recognized that and is working with city and business leaders to try to minimize the blow of such a big bombshell announcement to the Western Wisconsin economy. Still ahead, we'll talk to Congressman Mark Pocan about things that are happening in the nation's capital this week. Right now, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Tuesday morning, when you're here, you're up north live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here at 7:20, the Milwaukee Bucks are in Phoenix tonight. You can catch that game on Oshkosh Air Support, News from the Center and Richland Center, Lake Air and Amory, WRJN and Racine, and 98Q Country in Park Falls. Rankings changed for some of the college teams. In men's college basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers fell from number 6 to number 11 in the country. They next play at Michigan tomorrow. You'll be able to catch that game on locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, News from the Center in Richland Center, Lake Air and Amory, WRJN and Racine. The Marquette men's basketball team jumped up from number 9 in the rankings to now 7th ranked in the country. They are riding a 6-game win streak, and their next game is to host St. John's coming up on Saturday evening. The Badger women's basketball team will host Penn State next Sunday. The Marquette women's basketball team will be at Providence coming up on Saturday. For the Badger men's and women's hockey teams, their rankings don't change. The Badger men stay at number 4 in the country. They will be at home this weekend hosting Notre Dame on Friday and Saturday nights. The Badger women continue to be the 2nd-ranked team in the country, right behind Ohio State. The Badger women are riding an 11-game win streak with 6 games to go. 2 of those games will be this weekend up in Bemidji State. And we should note in Division 3, the women at UW-River Falls still ranked number 1 in the country with an undefeated season. River Falls, the women are 23-0 with 2 games to go. And those games are against sixth-ranked UW-Eau Claire. They will be home against Eau Claire on Wednesday. They will be in Eau Claire on Saturday to take on the Blue Gold women, who jumped up from 7-6 in the national rankings in the past week. And for the men, UW-Stevens Point holds steady at the eighth-ranked team in the nation. And the Blue Golds, the UW-Eau Claire men, went up from 14-11 in the national rankings for Division III men's hockey. Well, one more sports note, I guess, Greg. Maybe it's kind of sports, kind of isn't. It used to be NFL Media Day for the Super Bowl. Now it's Media Night because, of course, everything has become a production.
Media Night. Everything.
Now it's is it necessary? It used to be when it wasn't all a big production, that was just the day that sports reporters could come in and get some quotes from the players and then leave them alone for the rest of the week so they could practice for the big game. Now it's a big old production number. It's just, yeah. It's so out of hand. And I'll be fair. I'm sure there are people going, hey, this is great. We get to really see these people up close and personal. Yeah. And in the case of last night, you can hear the same question 48 times. What do you think of Taylor Swift?
Ugh. Not to mention some of these, don't come at me, athletes, but a lot of these guys, they're just like, what do you think of blah, blah? I'm just going to play. I'm just going to ball.
One game at a time. You know, nobody gave us a chance.
Listen to coach and really take the... What do you think of the game? Just run to the ball. Listen to coach.
It's content.
It's fine. It's all going to be content now. It's all going to be content, monetized.
Yep. Yeah. It used to be just quick and dirty. Give me your cliche quote and we'll move on. And now we've got to turn it into, you know, so much more. So, you know, it was a show to watch last night. That's fine. I get that. But it was just all of the Taylor Swift, you know, questions. We're like, can we just let it be? Just let it be.
Just want to hear one guy go, like, what do you think of Taylor Swift being at the game this weekend? And just going, who?
Yeah, good luck with that.
Is that like a coach's kid or a... What? No, is it a Make-A-Wish? What is that? I don't know who that is.
Yeah. One more. This one is more nominally sports because it involves one Brett Favre, the former Packer quarterback.
Boo!
But Mississippi's state auditor filed court papers yesterday renewing his call for Favre to repay the state for welfare money that the auditor says was improperly spent on projects that were backed by Favre. The auditor is demanding some $730,000 be returned from Favre. It's the latest twist in a very long-running legal battle now over basically how Republicans running the state of Mississippi just absolutely shamefully and illegally siphoned federal money that was supposed to go to help the poorest families in one of the poorest states in the nation. But rather than help the poors, Republicans running Mississippi said, oh, no, we're going to put it in all these different projects, to which Brett Favre at one point said, hey, I've got these athletic projects I'd like to do at my alma mater. Now, you know, Favre says he did not know that it was money that was skimmed off the top of, you know, federal welfare funds. He was simply asking for state funding, didn't see anything wrong with that. But he, you know, he has since learned more of the details of the case and continues to be embroiled, you know, in lawsuits and, you know, legal maneuvers all about what is a much, much larger case involving current and former officials in the state of Mississippi. Favre improperly received more than $1 million in speaking fees. He got those fees from a nonprofit organization, but the nonprofit organization got its funding originally with the skimmed off welfare funds. Favre wanted the money going to a volleyball arena at the University of Southern Mississippi. Greg, the whole thing is a bit convoluted, but as I drink some coffee, it is it's something you didn't expect to see from Favre in his retirement.
Not to this degree and not detail, but I don't think he's the greatest person. So the fact that he did this doesn't surprise me. And now every time someone wants to bring up the idea of, oh, just the poor just siphoning off welfare and blah, 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 blah. I don't know. The last time I heard about a welfare crime was Brett Favre. So,
yes, that's the thing. It is. It's one thing for Favre, who, by the way, probably could have funded all of these things himself.
He's worth like $100 million.
Yes, but you know, when anybody you know, in his position apparently has the opportunity to get somebody to pony up some of it, that's what he sought. And again, the question is, to what degree did he know that the money was, you know, improperly taken, essentially, by state officials? And you're absolutely right. It feeds into this whole notion of, well, people on welfare are just going to, you know, waste the money. No, the waste is actually coming from people who aren't spending funds for their designed intention.
Yeah.
You know, and we see the same thing here with the voucher schools program, which is, you know, just skimming money off the top for what should go to public education, but to go to, again, you know, provide subsidies, many going to families that already were going to private school and can afford the tuition, but Republicans running the legislature have found a way to do it. It's an interesting grift if you can get it. And you know, that's why we harp on these things about when people talk about wasted tax money. Yeah, a lot of the wasting is being done by the people who are criticizing tax dollars in the first place.
What did your friends had a couple weeks ago? They said that like $1.7 million was spent on a district or a school for choice.
In a legislative district. Yes, this is something we're going to come back to frequently. Is the Wisconsin Public Education Network has worked out a tool where you can go to a legislator who supported, you know, the way that voucher schools are funded. And you can see from the school districts in their legislative district, you can see how much less money is going to public schools in their district because they supported sending that money to the voucher school program instead.
Yeah.
So that's something that the Wisconsin Public Education Network calls their accountability project. And it most certainly is designed to keep Republicans accountable for how they are supposed to be guardians of public trust and public funds. Congressman Mark Pocan is next. You're up north. A man had to answer. Welcome back. It is 7:34 on this Tuesday morning, and we're joined now by Congressman Mark Pocan out in the nation's capital from the 2nd Congressional District. Congressman, how are you this morning?
I'm good, Pat. I got to say, listening to Pam Yonke's voice, I was watching a show on Netflix. I think it's called Night Guard. And they had a little spot in Racine, Wisconsin. And on the radio was Pam Yonke mentioned, but it wasn't her voice because her voice is so distinct. And I got to admit, that makes me feel like I'm back home.
Pam has a way of doing that. Pam has a farm report that is heard every morning at 5 a.m. on Civic Media radio stations in Hayward, Oshkosh, Amory, and Richland Center. And yeah, definitely something that feels like home. And at some point here in this conversation, we're going to get into, you know, the stalled farm bill and things that are important to Wisconsin agriculture and the rural economy. But we have to start with what can only be, I don't have an adjective to it. Is it a bombshell? Is it not surprising? What exactly is it? Where Republicans who for months have clamored for a border security bill, for an immigration bill, have a bipartisan deal right there in front of them and have said, no, they don't want it because Trump doesn't want it. And Congressman, I got to say, my first thought this morning was, all right, well, thank you. Thank you for taking that off the table. I guess it's not a real issue if this is how you're going to treat it.
So I think you can officially say the Republican Party was born in Ripon, Wisconsin on whatever year it had officially died this year, because the Republican Party is a cult. Donald Trump says something and then he can change it completely 180 degrees and everyone, you know, will change. This is the biggest fake issue that they have put out there. I mean, we clearly have issues at the border, but they have tried to blame President Biden. A reminder, when Donald Trump was president with a Republican Congress and the Republican Senate, he did nothing about the border. Now they're trying to blame it all on Joe Biden. And then when there's actually a solution, a bipartisan solution, they can't back it because it might make Joe Biden look good. Look, this group is the most disingenuous group. They don't have a value moral compass that guides them. It's all whatever the great orange man says. And if Donald Trump says it, then they all roll over and do whatever he said. In the meantime, we don't protect our border like we could. We don't have more sane laws like we could. And I think this is just a classic example of where the Republican Party has denigrated to.
The pivot or the flip-flop or whatever you call it is now twofold because of Trump. First, it was that the Republican Party, Ronald Reagan's party, and today is the anniversary of Ronald Reagan's birth. It used to be the one that stood up to the Soviet Union, the so-called evil empire. And then, Trump is now, as Putin-esque as it gets. But now the border as well. This had been, again, a classic Republican issue to which they're now saying, no, it's not that big of a deal that we want to take a bipartisan deal. It is just a stunning reversal of what the Republican Party once stood for.
Well, and, let me say there are Republicans in Washington who still believe the right thing, as they should, that if Russia or any country invades a sovereign nation, that there has to be a reaction, especially if it's a near NATO or NATO ally like Ukraine is. But they're silent because they won't stand up to what currently is Donald Trump's influence in the Republican Party primary system. So you're right. I mean, the fact that there's a security bill that has funding for Ukraine and Israel and humanitarian aid and border funding, and the fact that they're having such a hard time to get it across the finish line because Donald Trump, again, would prefer to take Putin's side on invading a sovereign country, it's really remarkable that this should be a slam dunk bill. I think the American people get it, that we need to continue to support Ukraine, and yet we won't get that done. They've said it's dead on arrival coming to the House. They refuse now to take up the border bill they've asked for. Like, we had 27 bills done last year, Pat, period. A lot of those were like post office renamings and insignificant things. This is the least productive place I have ever encountered, and I can really remember in my adult lifetime.
It is stunning that it is the shades of 2013, when again, there was an immigration border related security bill that got 68 votes in the Senate, and House Republicans wouldn't even take it up. And I don't know that Republicans, they didn't really ever pay a price for that, but I just don't see that happening this time. Now, look, I don't know exactly how President Biden will handle this, but I was reminiscing in our last hour to say, boy, if you'd have taken Bill Clinton and James Carville, and you basically said, here, you can now beat Republicans over the head with their own issue because they refused to take this up, it would have been downright entertaining to watch what Clinton would have done with that. I wonder how exactly the Biden team will do it, but they've handed Joe Biden the club.
Well, but more importantly, we're not getting done what we need to get done. The border, there's no question. That bill of 2013 was my first year here, Pat, and you're right. It was 68 bipartisan votes out of the Senate. When do you hear that on any major legislation, right? That's like a huge victory. John Boehner refused to take it up, along with, at that time, the Tea Party was the rise in the Republican Party. Now they're the moderates because it's this new MAGA extreme elements. And, they say one thing about the border and they do another, or more accurately, they don't do anything. They don't do the other. And here we are sitting that Congress is the one who has to act to change the laws to make the border work. And I hope Joe Biden does aggressively go after them on this complete reversal of everything that they said they've been trying to work on for 10 years.
I guess we should take care of that one talking point that we're hearing from House Republicans that say, well, Biden could take action if he wanted to. He doesn't need Congress to act. What is wrong with that point that they're making?
Lots. First of all, I mean, it's the laws that need change. That's why that law in 2013 was as strong as it was with 68 people. That had a pathway to citizenship for aspiring Americans. It had extra protections at the borders and a lot of other things. And that's how we have to deal with it comprehensively. The president doesn't have comprehensive power. That's in the law. That's in the lawmaking, which is Congress. The president can do a few things here and a few things there. But if we don't give him funding to do the things he wants, and the Republicans refuse to give the funding, if you can't hire the people you need at the border because we won't give the funding because that's what the Republicans won't do, then all that's for naught. So they want to have him do, a partial Band-Aid here and there, and then they're going to say, oh, look, he failed. when the reality is Congress has failed actually for a couple decades now. We've needed to deal with something. But certainly right now, when they're being offered a bipartisan solution from the Senate and they refuse to even look at it in the House, I think that really speaks volumes.
I wonder as well, from a foreign affairs standpoint, what kind of message this sends in terms of, I guess, American weakness. And I don't just mean about Ukraine, which is, you know, rapidly approaching dire straits right now, since it's been many months since there's been any U.S. aid there. And not just Israel, but Taiwan. I think of one of your colleagues, you know, Congressman Gallagher, all the time is talking about China. And I don't know, you know, the extent to which this had aid or assistance to Taiwan. But again, what kind of message of weakness is being sent by Congressman Gallagher and other Republicans in rejecting a bill like this?
Yeah, the problem is it's become really more of a do-nothing Congress in some ways. So it's not even that we have ideological differences. They won't fund anything. So if you don't fund help in places like Taiwan or other parts of the world that are troubled, we do take away our ability to do what I think we've often done in the world, and we've been a good influence in the world doing those things. So, you know, that's part of the problem. They won't fund people at the border like the president's asking for, so we can process people properly so that you can then have people go back who don't belong here. But they won't provide that funding, and that's the reality. That's the real issue. And they're all waiting for just Donald Trump to tell them what to do. They're waiting for the election in November. But you know what? People aren't waiting at the border to find out what Donald Trump is saying. They're still coming here. And we have, the system is broken as far as how the laws work right now. We absolutely want to keep many aspects of the asylum laws in place. But right now it's severely broken. And the fact that we're not taking that on so many fronts in the world that, you know, America traditionally has, is just showing how broken this Congress is, that this Republican Congress, again, 27 bills the entire last year, but they weren't a farm bill and they weren't a budget bill and it wasn't a whole lot of other things that we're supposed to do, just, again, tells you everything you need to know.
In fact, our friend Kristen Lyerly just sent me a link to a so-called exclusive from a right-wing news site that Congressman Gallagher has just introduced legislation to force the Biden administration to finish building a border wall and to pay for it ostensibly by closing loopholes that would provide, you know, assistance to undocumented immigrants. It just seems like the antithesis of an actual solution to the border.
Well, it's like you're regurgitating talking points and they don't make any sense together, right? That's what they're doing. They're just putting out whatever the base wants to hear, whatever Donald Trump wants to hear, because, you know, they're all competing for his love and attention. It's like, you know, it's really pretty sad. I got to admit, Pat, if I didn't tell you the honest truth that this has been the worst Congress I've ever served in, I wouldn't be telling you what I'm experiencing. We're getting nothing done. There's all this rhetoric. They say one thing and do just the exact opposite. And at the end of the day, there's real issues that we could do in a bipartisan way, like the Senate tried to just do recently with the border, with the security package. And yet we're unable to get them done because we're waiting for orders from Donald Trump.
We've mentioned before, as you did just a moment ago, the farm bill, which has been punted for up to a year. There are folks who want to try to get something done this spring, because trying to pass a farm bill a month before the election, you know, is just not workable. But again, we're still facing, you know, the imminent threat of a government shutdown. Wisconsin now has somebody on the House Agriculture Committee, Derek Van Orden, who at last report continues to go on a bender, a social media bender, I hasten to add, of just nonstop tweets insulting folks. And I'm just wondering, where's the productivity? Should we be looking for leadership from Derek Van Orden or anybody else to get a farm bill done sooner rather than later?
You have to actually hold them accountable for their failures, right? I mean, he's saying, I'm the first Wisconsin a member of Congress to serve on the Agriculture Committee in 10 years, and he's completely blown it. In fact, this is how bad it was, Pat. They had a 41% cut to the agricultural budget in the appropriations that came to the floor. That's what Republicans sent. And none of the Wisconsin delegation was able to stop a 41% cut to our farmers in Wisconsin. But then Derek Van Orden and Brian Stile had a brilliant idea. The Republicans completely zeroed out the Dairy Innovation Fund, $25 million that helps our dairy farmers bring products to market. And they didn't stop the $25 million hit to the fund, But then they came up with an amendment to put $10 million back in. So they're there 40% of the time for farmers in Wisconsin, just not 100%. Like that, you can't make this stuff up, how pathetic the representation has been. And you know, I'm not sure we're going to have that bill done in September. I think there's going to be another extension. You know, I was fortunate enough, Hakeem Jeffries put me on a task force to put together recommendations for the farm bill. We did all of that in plenty of time. It's just the Republican majority was completely unable to figure out what to do with the bill. And unfortunately, Derek, MIA as usual.
So we come back to, I guess, kind of the larger issue, and that is of a federal budget that didn't get done, what, 5 months ago now. And there's we're coming up on the next pair of deadlines for a potential government shutdown, right?
Yeah, March 1. And I'm going to predict right now we're going to miss the deadline. How's that?
I think they'll kick the can again.
You know, it generally takes 50 days to reconcile House and Senate budgets when they pass budgets. And neither the Senate didn't pass all theirs. The House certainly didn't pass all of ours. And we just recently, I think, negotiated the numbers for the 12 different bills, the top line numbers. There's no way that they're going to have this done by March 1st. And it'll probably be another punt because they can't get the votes in their own caucus because of their rules. And we've talked about this, Pap. I think it's important for people to understand Republicans passed rules beginning of last year. They can't come and get Democratic votes to pass anything. So they have to have 218 Republicans, and they only have, what, 220 or something right now because of people who've left and George Santos got booted from Congress. And because of that, they can't even pass the bills on the floor. So I don't know what's going to happen other than it's going to be another punt. I'm predicting it now, and that's not good either because that's the one job we have. That's the most important bill to get done. That's why I serve on appropriations, and it's not going to happen because of the Republican majority.
Well, not if they're busy scrounging for votes just to see if they can impeach the Homeland Security Secretary instead of doing all of these other things. But that's a topic for another day. Congressman Mark Pocan, we appreciate the update. Wish it was under more productive circumstances, but it's nice to know, you know, what is happening there and that people can be held accountable. Thank you very much. Safe travels. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, Pat. Appreciate it as always.
All right. When we come back, Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio will tell us about his show coming up next on the Civic Media Radio Network. That's the musical interlude that tells you the Chad Holmes radio show will be starting shortly. Coming up in about 15 minutes on Bull Falls Radio, part of the Civic Media Radio Network. You can listen outside of Wausau through the Civic Media app. Head over to civicmedia.us to learn more. Mr. Holmes, how you doing? How you feeling?
Doing very well. Good morning.
Your voice doesn't get a break until, what, late March or whenever state tournaments are done. So, you know, I feel like you're constantly having to medicate and keep the pipes working properly.
Doing my best.
He's just like, yes.
He's just like, yes, I'm trying to do Hemingway. Very short sentences.
No, interesting. It's not really a work thing. It's just that it's a lot of gunk going around central Wisconsin right now, and I got in the middle of it. I think it's a separate kind of issue, and it just sort of makes it more difficult when you got to talk for a living.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And well, you don't just talk, you listen. And I was looking through, I had to look up something about a past guest. And so I was looking through some of my old episodes. I was looking through some of your old episodes. And I was noticing that you talk more often about what's appearing on right-wing radio than I first appreciated. And I really respect that. It's something that the central and northern Wisconsin audience needs to hear, is hear constant fact-checking about what's being said over there. But I wonder now how those talking points are going to shift on right-wing media given these recent events. I mean, because they can continue to, here's Greg's word of the day for me, they can continue to caterwaul all they want about border issues, but they've just removed it as an issue by rejecting this bipartisan bill. There's nothing for them to stand on. And I wonder if they'll continue trying to fool enough of the people enough of the time.
isn't it a case right now of you got one group that does seem to want to try to solve issues? And you can go back, not just this year, but the last number of years, when, again, something I try to bring up from time to time, it's so easy to get caught up in personality and all the circus-like atmosphere of what's going on, but there are records. There are records. We can see that we, you know, you go down the line in those first 2 years, especially under President Biden and, you know, a very narrow majority in both houses, they were able to expertly be able to move through some legislation that was much needed. Then you have, on the other side, and again, we can go right back to, you know, talk about right-wing media here in the state, but our right-wing senator, Ron Johnson, is one of the leaders of this group that would not even look at this bipartisan deal. And again, that's bipartisan. And isn't it crazy that this senator from Oklahoma, who was tasked by Mitch McConnell to be part of this group, was this cut adrift by McConnell and everybody else, and the Oklahoma Republican Party trying to basically censured throw him out.
Yep.
Here's a guy, and I'm a, you know, we criticize a lot of folks on the right, but give, is it Senator Lankford, I believe is the name?
Yep, James Lankford.
Give him a lot of credit for standing up, being part of this bipartisan group of Democrat or Republican and an independent to get through months of negotiations, and he was told that he would have the back by Mitch McConnell until like yesterday or the day before when Mitch said, well, the politics have changed.
I've been told by Trump to saw this limb out from under you that we asked you to go out on. Just stunning. There's nothing middle of the road about James Lankford. He is as rock-ribbed conservative as they get, and he has been punished now for the crime of trying to get things done, trying to find solutions to a problem, which, again, just comes back to my point that now that that has been exposed as a phony issue, and it's not. There's real things that need to get done, but their position is phony. I just don't see how they can even continue this. They can't run on abortion anymore because of the Dobbs decision. They can't run on this anymore. They can't run on infrastructure, or healthcare because Joe Biden got those things done. They didn't. So it comes back to something I've said repeatedly, that any Republican can be asked straight to their face, what are you for? What are you willing to do? What do you do around here? And I can tell you that apart from insulting Biden and giving some, social issue talking points, I don't know what they're running on.
But if you go back 2 years, what was Ron Johnson running on?
Nothing.
Unfortunately, nothing. In this era,
in this case, they were running that Mandela Barnes might have been in a riot someplace. You know, it was shameful crap like that.
Ron Johnson didn't find his footing until he found conspiracy theories.
Yes. Yeah. Ron. Yeah, you're right.
He was a quiet guy. Right. He sat in the back. He didn't say anything. And then all of a sudden he thought, well, I read the Epoch News and this makes sense to me now.
Which is where Elise Stefanik has gone since then. And a few other folks that started out as moderate Republicans, and then they see that this is your path to re-election and to TV time and everything. And it's got to be so frustrating for the good, hardworking Republicans out there who haven't fallen into any personality cult and who actually want to do things, Chad.
The same line, isn't it amazing over the years how what used to be rock-rib conservative values have just changed? Whether it was, you know, the evil empire under St. Ronald Reagan, and now they are lock, stock, and barrel in the pocket of Vladimir Putin and the Russians. Whether it's the party of law and order, and on the weekend, Senator Vance of Ohio and Stefanik of New York said that Donald Trump can ignore the Supreme Court. Where's law and order? I mean, there is no there anymore. That's...
Right.
What? Well, there is no there. It's a cult of personality. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Yep. Greg, what were you going to say?
I was going to say Congressman Chip Roy from Texas gets up in the middle of the room and says, give me something to go home and campaign. He's screaming at his party. Give me something to go home and campaign on.
I played that at breakfast and I was like, oh, I got to remember to put that up. And I forgot to play it today. But yes, find it. Keep it handy.
Yep.
It is the mantra for the Republican Party at this point. So,
and the records you're talking about, Chad, those records that people can go and read, they're counting on people not reading them. And if they read them, they wouldn't believe them.
Yes, that's just it.
And they're counting on people not following what's happening this week. Because the idea, Pat, I agree with the thought, but if you think they're not going to be running on the border for the next 8-10 months, it's still going to happen.
They're going to try, but they have really cut their legs out from under them. Chad Holmes, thank you so much. Have a great show today. We'll talk to you again soon. Greg, thank you so much. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to be talking to John Shelton about the importance of teaching about labor history and the labor movement in Wisconsin schools. That'll do it for us today. Have a great Tuesday. We'll see you back here up north tomorrow.